In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stephen's Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's coolest conversations time in Little Stephen's Underground Garage, presented by Hard Rock. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening. Please remember to follow, subscribe, rate, and review. My guest is Boston music scene veteran Sal Baglio, who we've spoken to before as a member of the Amplifier Heads, and he's also teamed up with scene veteran Dan Kopko of the Shanghai Lows, and a group they have together called the Peppermint Kicks. Their second album is Pop Rocks and My Chewing Gum, available from our friends over at Rumbar Records, and it features our recent coolest song of the world, Little Doll, Piccolo Poopa, inspired by the young Italian teenage singing star of the 60s. I'll give it a spin now, and then I'll be back with Sal for your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock in Little Stephen's Underground Garage. Coolest conversations time here in Little Stephen's Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred, and I'm going to be speaking with Sal Baglio, guitarist in the Peppermint Kicks. Debut album is Pop Rocks and My Chewing Gum. It's out on Rumbar Records. And the cut off of it, Little Doll, Piccolo Poopa. It's our coolest song in the world this week. Sal, how are you?
I'm good, Manfred. It's nice to be back with you, and this is just amazing.
So you and I, we spoke back like 2022. We're talking about the Amplifier Heads at the time.
Yeah.
And I've also spoken to Dan Kopko, your compatriot there in the Peppermint Kicks. So we've spoken with him. I've spoken to about the Shanghai Lows.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about how the Peppermint Kicks formed. But first, tell me about Dan. How do you two guys know each other?
Well, we met each other at a gig. I knew about his band, Watts, which were great, great rock band. And this is going back to maybe 2019. We were doing a big Christmas show. His band played. They did a version of Father Christmas by the Kinks. Got my attention. And my band, we played Run, Run, Rudolph. Anyway, we spoke after the show. And just mutual love of music and you know, one of those things, why don't we get together sometime and maybe we should write a song, you know. And then a little time went by. I think the pandemic was on in 2020. And he sent me a song. He said, you have any ideas? Put some guitar on this thing or whatever.
What was the song? Do you recall?
It was called Johnny D's, which was a nightclub that shut down in Somerville, Mass. Was a big place that a lot of bands played there through the years. And he had written a little, salute to Johnny D's. And I threw some guitar on it and a couple of ideas. And then I sent him a song and he did the same. And he just said, why don't we make a record? And it was the pandemic, so we were never in the same room. You know, and we just started writing tunes together, and that was when the first Peppermint Kicks record came out, and it's been 5 years, so we thought it might be time to do another one, you know.
Well, let me ask you this. You know, I've been to Boston a number of times and performed there, and I've just always felt like there's still such it's still a very fertile ground for rock and roll, as compared to a lot of other places in the country, even, you know, comparably sized urban areas. Why is the rock and the roll is still so strong there? Why is the force so strong still there in the Boston area?
You know, I'm not quite sure why. You know, it might be something in the jet fuel from Logan Airport. I'm not sure, you know, but many of us have stayed around and continue to play. There's just a recent documentary out called Life on the Other Planet. You might have heard about it.
No, I haven't. Tell me about
it's primarily about the Rat, you know, 1977 to 87, which leaves out a lot of people, but it covers a lot of ground, you know. The Nervous Eaters were in there, and my first band, the Stompers. And many of those musicians are still around making music today, you know, as well as new younger bands come up. I kid Dan a lot because there's a good age gap between Danny and I.
What is the age gap between you guys?
Geez, I think it's 14 years, something like that. You know, which is interesting. If you know, like I remember seeing the Beatles on Ed Sullivan. So Dan's thing is a little bit after that, you know. But he's still got all that. He's got all that great, you know, British bang happening in his music. But he's coming in from a slightly different place, a different starting point. But it actually works pretty well with us, you know. I'll be like, I don't know what you're talking about, youngster. You know, we kid each other about it. You know, we get some, you know, he's still got good hair, you know, and so.
Well, let's talk some about this, the new album. So you did one back during the pandemic. You got the new one out now, Pop Rocks and My Chewing Gum. I know that Dan does some engineering. Maybe he has a home studio. How did you guys put the record together? Where did you do it?
Yeah, similar to the first one, we did a lot of home recording. The drummer we used for most of the tracks is a gentleman by the name of Kevin Rapillo, who lives in Nashville. So we would send him the tracks to put live drums on. We did it at home mostly, you know. I would do my parts at my home studio and then send them over to Dan. But he, you know, he's got the big stuff. So he did all the mixing and the mastering over there at Copco International.
Did he earn the title of being a producer?
I think we both did on that. We both earned that title.
Well, so our coolest song in the world this week is it's little, what is it? Little Doll Piccolo Poopa. Did I say that right?
Yes, you did, man. I'll tell you why I'm laughing after. I'm not laughing at you.
Okay. All right. And, I know she was like discovered back in the 60s by like Danny Thomas, and he brought her to the US, and she already had some notoriety over there in Italy. And even I think like the BBC had featured her in some programs. Well, what is your tell us about her and the reason that you wanted to write a song about her?
Well, it was kind of accidentally. I had the riff of the tune, the guitar riff, and I was just singing a melody of a stream of consciousness, as I will do, you know, to find out what the heck I'm singing about. And I kept singing little girl, and I'm like, well, that's been done a million billion times, so what am I gonna say about that, you know? And then one time I said, you know, blah 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 blah, little doll, and boom, I remembered being a little kid and watching the Ed Sullivan Show you know, and I grew up in a predominantly Italian neighborhood, and Italian people would go insane when anybody on Ed Sullivan was had anything to do with Italy, you know. So I can remember my mother screaming, you know, Piccolo Poop is going to be on, you know, and we would just laugh at the name. And of course, we were waiting for whoever, you know, the Animals, Dave Clark Five to come on. But it's such a wonderful, warm memory, you know. I mean, Sunday nights was Ed Sullivan, and that's what you did. And this was, I think, December 64, so it was after the Beatles. And it was just a memory. So I decided to write the song around that, you know. And so it was a little bit of a history lesson. And then, of course, a little bit of made up stuff, you know.
Well, did you have to educate Dan?
I believe so. Yeah. I know he never heard of her. He looked her up. And one of the reasons I was laughing at Piccolo Pupa is because in my original version, I had a chorus at the end of the song where we just kept singing the words Piccolo Pupa over and over again. And when Dan did the vocal, he said, "Man, I can't sing it." He goes, he starts laughing. He said, "I keep laughing." He goes, "I can't sing Pupa. I just can't do it." And I said, "Well, it means little doll." And he goes, "It makes me queasy. I can't do it." So we edited it out of the song. And, you know, maybe that was the right thing to do. You know, because now it's we got cooler songs. Maybe if Pupa was in it, I don't know, man, Fred, if it would have worked, man, you know.
Well, so, you know, she ties you to that that mid 60s and the Ed Sullivan. And she was also like on the Dean Martin show. So I saw an interview with her on American Bandstand. She appeared in, what is it? The Invisible Bikini.
Yep.
No, Ghost. That's it. Ghost in the Invisible Bikini. All right. But the album, not just her, not just that song, but the album overall has got themes of radio, 60s pop culture. Talked about Pupa there, Piccolo Pupa. How about some, tell me something about your love of Japanese anime, at least on the album. You've got Gigantor and Speed Racer. I mean, were these shows like on back-to-back when you were growing up?
I think, you know, I seem to remember those cartoons. Again, you know, how those songs came to be is just, I think Speed Racer came first, but I sent Gigantor over to Dan, and he, the music and the title, and he wrote the lyric to it, and sang the heck out of it. You know, it just lent itself to, okay, well, I have another one kind of called Speed Racer. So it just happened that way. It wasn't really intentional. Again, when I write kind of the music in a stream of syllables sometimes. And Speed Racer was Teen Rager. You know, it was a bunch of different things. And then finally, I think after I had written Gigantor, I said, well, maybe that needs to be Speed Racer. And
well, was Dan familiar with these shows?
Yeah, he was. He was definitely familiar with Speed Racer. I think he said, you know, he'd come home from school and watch that when he was a kid.
Well, what about the ones that I remember? Speed Racer was always, I grew up in the Atlanta area, and that was Channel 17, Ted Turner's thing before he became TBS and Nationwide and all that. But Speed Racer was always there. Gigantor, I think, was on some other UHF. I can't remember the difference between UHF and VHF, but some other little station in Atlanta. And we also had, there was Kimba the White Lion, or Kimba the Lion, Astro Boy briefly.
Astro Boy, that's a good title. We need to write a song called Astro Boy.
Oh yeah, you definitely have to write Astro Boy. Well, the album closes with "We Did It All for Rock and Roll." All right. Yeah. So tell me about that. I mean, you're still doing it for rock and roll. It seems like she could be a harsh mistress, Sal.
Yeah. Well, that was a dance song. He brought that in pretty much complete. I just added some guitar work and some singing on it. But that's a Dan tune right there. And we chose that to close the record because it just seemed fitting.
Yeah, it does. And I understand this. A Dan song, he brought it in. How does it resonate with you specifically, though?
We did it all for rock and roll. Well, yeah. I mean, you know, that's our general Dan and I. When we have any conversations at all, it's always about our version of pop culture and rock and roll and what it meant to us. Even with the age difference, you know, he talks about what the Clash meant to him, and you know, and when he was very young, Kiss, you know, and all that. And I tell him, well, you know, you know, I remember when the Beatles were on TV, and you know, he'll rib me a little bit about that. But
let me ask you. But here's the thing about that too. You've referred to the age difference a couple of times, so he explains this exuberance he feels about the Clash or Kiss. So do you share in that, or is your perspective like, yeah, but I remember that happening, but you know, what it really was about the Beatles.
Yeah. Well, no, I certainly respect where he's coming from in that era of music. I respect all, there's a bunch of eras of music that came after my, where my DNA comes from, you know, that's still very important. But of course, the first thing that gets you, the first thing that got me is the most important to me, you know, the Kinks, the Who. I mean, those are the bands, you know, Brian Wilson and all that stuff. You know, the first concert I went to, my older brother took me, I was 12 years old, to see Janis Joplin. I didn't quite know what I was even experiencing.
So was it Big Brother at the time, or was it Janis Joplin as a solo thing?
It was 69, so it was the Cosmic Blues band.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was after Big Brother, yeah.
Yeah.
It was 69. We couldn't get tickets to the Stones at the Garden, and so this was his I wanted to go so bad, you know, and he's like, well, this is what I got for us, you know. He was home on leave at the time.
So wait a minute. What did you think of you went to see Janis Joplin there, you're 12 years old?
Yeah.
What happened?
It tore my head off, you know. It was at the Music Hall, and we were sitting way up high. I think Paul Butterfield Blues Band was the opening act. And then she said, I'm going to bring a friend on to do a couple of songs with me. He's playing at the Boston Tea Party. His name is Johnny Winter. And I was like, wow, this is wild. You know, this is crazy, you know. And years later, through a mutual friend of mine that I worked with, Tom Hambridge, he was producing Johnny Winter. And I got to play on a track on one of his records. And I I mentioned that to him, and I mean, he said he remembered. I don't know, you know. He was very nice, very kind. He's like, oh yeah, I might remember 1969, you know. But that was a trip. I mean, just a trip to work with him after seeing him like that, you know. Man, it's crazy.
Well, talking about gigs. Peppermint Kicks, do you guys have any shows upcoming?
We're done for the winter. Probably in the spring. We're looking ahead to spring and summer, and we're gonna book a bunch of shows, and hopefully we'll play a show at the Woggles.
That sounds good to me. We got to get ourselves back.
I put you on the spot there, my friend. I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, man. Well, you know, I have my force field up. Yeah, sure. No. We weren't able to get up there this year. So next year for sure we'll be up there, and we'll see if we can get the stars to align and all that kind of stuff.
That would be wonderful, obviously.
So I want us to talk about one more track, and this is a cut we're going to go out with, the Radio Wham Bam Boo. And but tell me first, because there are a couple of this one and also the song, like number one record, has a lot of sort of radio imagery, talking about radio. What was the genesis of Radio Wham Bam Boo? Was this you or him, or you guys together at the same time?
I brought that one in, and Dan brought number one record in. Radio Wham Bam Boom was pretty much completed, but Dan did some vocals and played bass and did a bunch of great stuff on that record, on that song. That was just a little, you know, salute to radio, you know. Radio was very important for me growing up, you know, from AM to FM, and now we've gone satellite, but radio was really big and very important. And so it's just a little salute, you know. It was Dan's idea to invite Palmyra.
Right, I was saving that. Yeah, that's right. Our very own Palmyra Del Ran offering some platter chatter there.
Yeah.
So Dan reached out to her?
Yeah, yep. So Dan had the idea of maybe we should have a spoken DJ thing, similar to, I think the Ramones did something with, do you remember Rock and Roll Radio?
Yeah, right.
There was a DJ.
Right.
So he said, maybe we should do that, you know? And I'm like, oh, yeah. Well, what do you got in mind, you know? And he reached out to Palmyra and said, you know, just do something. And she graciously said yes, and it was great. You know, I mean, what can you say? You know,
what I can say is there is none more cooler than she.
I will agree with you 100%. You know,
so have you ever played with any of her, with her various, you know, she has different people backing her sometimes, but like the Doppelganger or anything?
No, not yet. I think the Amplifier Heads at one point were going to do a show with her and the Shanghai Lows. It was a crazy incestuous thing, but it didn't pan out. It was going to be up here in Boston, but I hope that we do.
Well, cool, man. Well, look, Sal, I want to thank you again for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Thank you, my friend. And again, thank everybody at LSUG. They've just been so good to us, and thank you.
Well, all right. We're going to give a listen now to Radio Wham Bam Boom from the Peppermint Kicks off the debut album Pop Rocks and My Chewing Gum here in Little Steven's Underground Garage. Radio Wham Bam Boo, that's the Peppermint Kicks here in Little Steven's Underground Garage off their Rumbar Records album Pop Rocks and My Chewing Gum. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the band Sal Baglio for speaking with me today on our Coolest Conversations. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza and Kurt Baker for producing our podcast. New Jersey rocker Bobby Mahoney, he's got a new single out now on Wicked Cool Records called Smoke and Drive. We're going to find out all about it when Bobby joins me for our next Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Pirates.
Daddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.